Today's presenter is Nateen Gaur. Nateen is currently working in capacity of Webster Consulting IT Specialist with IBM's TechWorks organization. Prior to teaming with TechWorks organization, Nateen spent several years with Webster OEM team and AIX support. In his 7.5 years with IBM, he has achieved various industry recognized certificates and enriched his career by doing more than required by defined job responsibilities. Prior to beginning his career with IBM, he was a graduate student at the University of Maryland, University College. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Nateen.
Thank you, Elijah. Hi, folks. My name is Nateen Gaur, and I work with TechWorks organization. And we have a lot of material to cover, so I'll just get going. The topic of today's presentation is XD and large topology design consideration. And even though I'm presenter of this presentation, there has been a lot of work that's gone into it over time. The lessons learned that I have included in this comes from past few months and possibly a year of engagement that we've learned from customer engagements. So there's a lot of knowledge in this presentation, and thanks, you know, goes to many people from Webster System Management Team and Webster XD Development Team who have given guidance in making this a possibility. So let's proceed to the next slide, where we talk about agenda. And in this slide, we're going to discuss, you know, at a very high level, we'll talk about introduction to WebSphere XD, and even though the presentation talks about XD and large topology, I'm not assuming that everybody on this call would know about XD, so we'll spend about, you know, 3 to 4 minutes just talking about XD and what it does at a, you know, as its value proposition. Then we'll talk about ND and large topology. The reason why I talk about ND is because there are many constructs and concepts built into ND that's exploited by XD. So it's very relevant for us to understand what ND entails and the design consideration for a large topology with ND itself prior to discussing XD. And once we've accomplished that, we've understood the challenges with ND and large topology considerations, we'll then move over to XD and see as to how various, you know, autonomic managers and autonomic controllers use the underlying system management framework provided by ND. I think this is probably one of the most vital parts to understand, which we've learned this, you know, through various discussion groups, through various customer engagements, and simply the hard way sometimes. But it's really vital to understand that aspect as to how these components interact and what of the underlying ND components they use. And then we'll talk about best practices and lessons learned. And I will give examples of two sample organizations. One is a bank, and the other one is a retail organization. And we'll see as to, with the help of sample topology, as to what we've learned in those scenarios and how we've able to, you know, challenge, I mean, overcome the challenges that these topologies present themselves. And I have a few closing thoughts to kind of sum everything up. So let's move to next slide. And this slide essentially covers a little detail of each and every aspect. So like I said earlier, I'll talk a little bit of XD. With ND and large topology, we'll first define what a large topology is. There is no quantitative number that you can say, you know, if you have X amount of nodes or X amount of servers in a cell, it's a large topology. It all depends on various factors like the number of nodes, the number of servers per node, and so on and so forth. So we'll see as to what a, you know, what could be a large topology. We'll talk about challenges. We will introduce core groups and core group bridges. I think I make a deliberate attempt to discuss these because these are the concepts that are exploited by XD controllers, and that's important to understand in performance tuning the autonomic environment that XD presents. In XD topology, we'll discuss briefly on as to what is HA Manager and what are the, you know, why it's important from XD standpoint. In best practice section, we'll talk about some examples. Next slide, please. So we'll do the XD. Let's go to slide 5. That's next slide. And this slide essentially brings about, you know, introduces XD and its, you know, its value proposition. XD, as we've talked about earlier, virtualizes your middleware server processes, and the servers could be either WebSphere or any supported middleware application servers. And again, I think what we've told our customers is that, you know, it's an amalgamation of grid computing and autonomic computing. Grid computing It provides a good computing by virtualizing the application infrastructure environment. So WebSphere XD establishes a grid of shared resources such as WebSphere runtimes and non-WebSphere runtimes that are the application deployment targets. And the resources of those runtimes is virtualized in a common resource pool, thereby providing a sort of a runtime environment for a bunch of applications. So it provides sort of shared resources. And autonomic computing simply means that, you know, it has the capability of the mnemonic that we use, usually associated with autonomic computing, which is self-chop, which is self-configure, self-heal, self-optimize, and self-protect. And it does that by various policy-driven mechanisms, such as, you know, your health policies and service-level policies and so on and so forth. XD itself is packaged into three separate packages, and one is the operation optimization, which is the first half of the quadrant that you see, which is essentially operation optimization and managing health policies and so on and so forth. And adopting operation optimization does not really include changing your application. As long as your application is running in today's WebSphere environment, deploying XD would not necessarily change the application run, you know, applications themselves. But having XD operation optimizer gives you additional capabilities in types of prioritizing your application traffic coming into your environment. The other two aspects of XD is data grid and compute grid, and they go into high performance and extreme computing, in which you have data grid, which is high-end caching mechanism, and compute grid, which provides capability of having, you know, running your batch applications in your JT environment. So the intent of XD was to really bring together the various disparate systems that the enterprise infrastructure contains today into one single runtime and, you know, provide the advantages of easy manageability and so on and so forth. Next slide, please. And with Envy, we talked about high availability in which you have static clusters. And with static clusters, you could define sort of clusters, deploy applications, define static weights, and you had a fine grained way of controlling as to what weights you assign your servers and so on and so forth. With XD, we go into something called, you know, continuous availability. And by that, what I mean is that with continuous availability, you're able to have no interruption at all. So we'll talk about as to what are the concepts that are related to continuous availability, things like dynamic clustering. So we're moving away with XD from static clustering, which you define the weights to the server instances, into dynamic clustering, in which you define a set of policies and principles. And XD then, you know, uses those resources based on your policies to include servers and include capacity as and when required. So that is the aspect of continuous availability. Another advantage of continuous availability is that, for instance, if you were to have memory leaks and heap dumps occurring from time to time, you can have health policies which graciously brings the server down, gets the diagnostic information, brings the server back into commission, thereby relieving your time and energy into resolving those end problems and bring the server back into commission. So those are the high-level principles of continuous availability that's offered by XD, which is above and beyond high availability. And as this slide shows, that while earlier you would have siloed application resources, now you have a single pool of resources, sort of a shared environment, where application could be deployed anywhere, and you have to basically control their runtime environment using policies, and so on and so forth. So let's move to slide 7, which is the next slide. And here, you know, I want to spend some time in talking about virtualization. It's not magic, really. It works on a few principles, which was introduced in version 6 of WebSphere. So the application virtualization is done through resource pooling, and the WebSphere nodes logically are grouped into node groups, which is nothing but a collection of machines. And like I said earlier, instead of specifying static clusters where you specify certain nodes or certain server instances or nodes into a static cluster, you define a set of policies in which you can define, you know, node either by name or by operating system type, or even converting an existing static cluster into a dynamic cluster. And the reason why they're called dynamic clusters is because they have the capability of growing and shrinking based on the requirements of the application load, meaning that you could have a higher load for an application deployed to an IMEC cluster, and if there are additional capacity available, it'll include the other members which may be dormant in the IMEC cluster to service the capacity, and when the load is down and other application requires the resources, then those resources are relinquished to the other dynamic cluster which may exist in the same node. The reason it's important to understand this is because unlike static clusters, you don't assign any dynamic cluster. I mean, you don't assign any static weights to dynamic clusters because that will defeat the purpose. So dynamic cluster weights are automatically assigned by the system. And we'll talk about something called Dynamic Workload Manager component with XD, which does that. The sole purpose of DWLM component is to assign dynamic weights to the application servers based on the load of the servers, based on the capacity of the servers. So you can see as to how that information is then utilized by the ODR, which is another component of XD, to find out or to determine as to which server has additional capacity or can handle more functions. So let's go to slide 8. And in this slide, I talk about XD Autonomic Controllers. And I think this is important to understand, and I think maybe in the next 10 or so slides, I'll try to tie them all together. This picture is a picture only to, you know, only to discuss the autonomic controller. So it's not a true depiction of your application serving environment. However, what this picture attempts to show is that you have additional controllers, which are highly managed components, application placement controllers, health controllers, ARFM controllers, which has its own component, and its Autonomic Request Flow Manager component. That's what ARFM stands for. And DWLM component. And all these are the XD controllers that provide the autonomic and grid capabilities that XD tells itself for. So each of these components are HA managed. So the same concepts that were utilized in ND, were introduced in 6.0 are used for the XD controllers. They all work in concert, meaning each of them have a specific role. Each XD autonomic agent have a specific role and a function, and work in concert to form an XD autonomic system. Each of the controllers either participates in collection and analysis of the data from shared resources, meaning that to be able to provide the system with the knowledge of which server is up and running and which server is overly stressed or which server has more capacity, it has to continually compute certain data points that it receives from, you know, various other controllers. And we'll talk, you know, a little more in depth about, you know, these controllers in slides to come. But the important thing to remember here is that they're HA managed. They have to work in concert. So neither one of the components can work alone. And they're tunable. And I think this is just important to remember now because when we get down to large topology considerations, we'll talk about the tuning at the HA manager level. We'll talk about the tuning at the sensitivity of these controllers. Because remember, these controllers are continually, you know, evaluating data, and we have to be able to control the frequency of when and how they analyze the data, so you can actually less stress your environment, which may already be stressed. So we'll talk about that. And besides the HA manager, DCS, you know, HA provides group services. We'll talk about core groups, which I'm sure many of the Westway administrators who are running in 6.0 and above version are quite familiar with it because we've had initial challenges with performance with core group introduction. But I think it's a very important concept to understand and provide some really valuable services, not only to the WebSphere components, you know, like WLM and messaging engines, but also all of these XD controllers that you see on the slide. So let's move on to next slide. And now let's talk a little bit about ND and large topology. And in this case, let's go to slide 10. Next slide. And what I've done to understand is, you know, every time we visit a customer, we talk to clients, like, you know, we have performance problems. So I've tried to isolate or draw differences between separation of configuration management and operation management. And by that, I mean that you have two types of performance issues. One is, you know, one is you're managing configuration. So oftentimes when you have an extremely large cell, and you're trying to synchronize, that process of synchronization takes a long time. And that can be attributable to network and disk I.O. delays because you're trying to, you know, say, for instance, update 200 nodes, you know, at the same time, and that oftentimes takes time, which may be perceived as a performance problem. Even though I think with this variable scoped configuration XML files, which essentially means that the DManager contains the hierarchy of all the node servers, and only the node and server specific files are pushed. The DManager then becomes the single point of the entity that's pushing all the files over. So it may be perceived as a performance problem, but I want to be able to draw the differences between configuration and operation management, because when we go further down into the sample topology XD, we'll see as to how we noticed the two, and they were really two separate issues that we had to deal with. Second thing we have to understand is the JMX framework for operational management, and this is kind of important to understand as to how when you write your scripts or query your application server runtimes, as to how this queries the entire environment. So oftentimes, for sake of simplicity and ease, oftentimes people would run those wildcard queries for each and every endpoint of type application to sell. And to fulfill, every running server has to be checked and returned. And that can oftentimes take a long time. So to overcome that, we obviously say, you run a specific query that will search an endpoint type of an application on a specific node, on a specific, specific server on a specific node on a cell, which drastically reduces that return time that you have. And also, things like a node sync and JMS request queries considerations, you may want to either increase your, depending on how many, how big your environment is and the changes that you are distributing to the environment, you may want to increase the node sync time, or even make it manual. That way you have fine-grained control over how you're synchronizing your nodes. And we have some additional options in XD in terms of backing up repository and so on and so forth, which we'll discuss when we get to it. So, this diagram really shows, if you look at the red dotted lines, that's the configuration, and the blue line is the command. And you typically would do this with DManager to query any of these app servers itself. Let's move on to the next slide. So why? Next slide, Elijah. Hello, Elijah.
Yeah, you can continue. It's got a little hang.
Oh, okay. So next slide is basically how many applications per server. And this is one of the most common questions is, how many application servers do we have per node? And I think I'll spend some time here because this becomes vital as we design our XD topology, because remember, we talked about dynamic clusters. We talked about X amount of application server instances coming up as and when the system sees the need for it. So there'll be instances that we'll see that we'll have more servers defined on a node, but we do have it, we do have a number in mind that we keep. So let's just talk about, first thing is, a blank question, how many application servers per node? So one thing we recommend is, we always ensure that you have the application servers completely within the physical memory. So, for example, if you have an app server with 1.5 or 2 GB of heap size, and you have 8 GB on that particular node, then make sure that at any given point in time there are no more than 4 app servers running on those. That's just, basic common sense, because you don't want to hit the virtual memory that can add to additional performance hits. So one thing we do recommend is, have some overhead, so have about half a gig to a gig overhead for other processes that are running in the operating system. In XD world, one thing that you may want to know is we have done, in many customer engagements, configured a server with almost double the capacity, meaning that if a server is capable of handling 4 application servers, we've had 8 application servers as a part of dynamic clusters. And that's simply because we don't anticipate more than 4 servers running at any given point in time. So when we talk about dynamic clustering and planning for designing how many application servers, we will see that you'll have one dynamic cluster for one application, and you'll have another dynamic cluster for another application that may coexist in the same node. But you do know that when you assign priority to these applications, you don't expect both the application servers to be running at the same time, or both the dynamic cluster members of both the application servers running at the same time. So you leave the XD to do the resource management. However, oftentimes we do extend additional app server configuration more than what's recommended here. And it's important to understand that once a server reaches a certain amount, then the health management controller, which is a part of XD, will not allow for additional app servers to be started on the nodes. So we oftentimes say it's safe to have additional servers because, you know, the health controller will say, look, you know, the server cannot handle additional capacity, so we'll not start up any additional servers. So this is something to keep in back of your mind when we talk about the sample topologies that we'll discuss at the end of this presentation. Slide 12, please. And in this slide, we really talk about how many nodes in a cell. You know, while there's no design limits to the number of nodes in a cell, there are practical limits. So we have to understand in terms of, number one, how stable and how fast your network. Latency of interaction between the DMAs and the node agents, and that goes back to, you know, of these three of the machines and the networks and so on and so forth. You may want to increase sync intervals as your size grows. One more thing to know in this case is while there is no physical limitations to the amount of cells, when we talk about core groups, which become central to the XD design considerations, we have to know that there are certain limitations that core group will pose. So even though you may have a very large cell, we may have to design the core groups, multiple core groups in a cell, so that the XD components themselves can work in concert. This slide merely represents that, you know, we have never said that there's a limit to the number of nodes, but oftentimes we've seen that, you know, as your nodes grow, what happens when a cell is too big? You know, you have cost and trouble managing more than the value it delivers. So oftentimes you lose track because your cell is so big. So having a good size of cell that's manageable is always a recommended thing. Let's go on to slide 13. And I'll spend some time, significant time on this slide. And the reason why I want to do that is majority of the issues that we have encountered either in the labs or in customer environments has been around understanding HM Manager and tuning this component and tuning the other components that use this underlying layer. So let me introduce HM Manager in a short few sentences. So HM Manager was introduced in Webster 6.0 NDE, and it was designed to provide group membership implementation that could be used to reliably detect cluster members, cluster memberships, and generate events as the membership of the cluster changed. So you can see as to, you know, what happens if certain servers went down, then everybody has to be, you know, all the other group members had to be aware of that change in group membership. And the reason why this was important was because you had these singleton services. In NDE, it was basically transaction manager, your messaging engines, your workload manager, and your member-to-member application, which was handled by HM Manager services. They had to be ensured that these services are always available, and the end user is not burdened with managing these components. Because we introduced messaging engine version 6, and we had to ensure that it's transparent to the end user. So core group was introduced, you know, for those services. And as these concepts developed and took a higher form, the XD controllers piggybacked on the same high availability services that were offered by, you know, HM Manager. So HM Manager uses technology from IBM Research. There are two notable ones, which is listed over here, which is distribution custom services, which sits on top of reliable multicast messaging. And DCS essentially is a group membership library, and RMM is a very fast pops-up, lightweight pops-up, you know, messaging system. And the core function of DCS is to implement view-synchronous communication between set of Java virtual machines. So if you have a bunch of application servers and node agents, then the DCS will ensure that you have view-synchrony maintained between these. It also, you know, DCS is also used as a transport mechanism by your member, you know, if you have such a replication between, you know, between servers. Now, why is it important for us to understand that? There are two failure detectors between DCS, and oftentimes, as you can see on this diagram, these transaction services and DRS, which is replication service, workload manager, messaging engine, on-demand configuration, which is exploited by XD, and the other controllers that use these HM Manager services, rely on the lower level DCS and RMM services. So it's very important for us to tune these DCS services because we don't want, in a large environment, to sell false alarms thereby sending out activity in which you're basically stopping and starting these services on various nodes. So there are certain failure detection mechanisms that DCS employs, which is important for us to understand. One of them is a TCP/IP socket, which is basically a socket open between a pair of JPMs. And if this socket closes unexpectedly because your server goes down or your node is down, then JVM is assumed to be, you know, to have died. So even though it's happening at the OS level, it's because the server is not available or the node is not available, it's an assumption that JVM dies. Even though OS may be able to clean up sockets, which is used by failed processes, but there is basically an option available to tune this or to change as to how much time you would need to basically declare a server dead. Second thing is, it also includes the mechanism of heartbeats, meaning as to how many heartbeats are missed before JVM is considered failed. So you see as to how if you have a pretty low number for these heartbeats, oftentimes any network latency can induce a lot of activity at the CCS level, thereby declaring a JVM dead when it's not really dead. It's really busy serving other requests. So it's really important to understand the tuning parameters that surround these components to be able to tune these services that run above these layers. So let's move on to the next slide. And here is understanding HA and core groups. So essentially core group is a construct, or HA manager is based on the concept of core groups. Core group is nothing but a collection of firmly coupled processes that cooperate. All of them have to be confined to a cell. So basically, you cannot have a core group across cells. They have to be confined to a cell. And basically, a WebSphere cell can have more than one core groups, and we'll talk as to why that's important, because there are certain limitations in terms of the growth of connections and so on and so forth, which this slide alludes to. The reason why we recommend that is because the core groups do not scale to the same degree as cells. So this is where our discussion earlier with drawing the differences between the configuration and operation management comes into play, is that while that is still a feasible solution, core groups may not be able to scale to the same size that a cell goes to, even though core groups reside inside a cell. And simply because, as we discussed earlier, that core group is nothing but it provides group services. So every JVM, as you can see in this diagram, provides sort of a connection to every other JVM. So you can see as to how adding additional JVMs or adding additional app servers, including node agents, in a cell can add to the geometric growth of the overall connection, and they can grow exponentially. In this case, you see if you have two nodes, you have two links, and if you have six nodes, you have 30 links. So just by adding five additional nodes or four additional nodes, you see the growth has really, jumped up. Also, because of this, because of the connection that it maintains, it has to have more memory per JVM to hold the messages that the DCS uses to communicate between the JVMs. So there are certain level of optimization that's available. I think we've learned over time and with customer engagements, and we've introduced them as either fixes, or we've introduced them as custom properties or tunable parameters. And I think as a variety of those, such as memory buffer parameters at DCS and the transport buffer size that RMM utilizes, you can actually tune them or add them as a custom property in the core group configuration to provide you with a higher buffer size to scale well. But these, the point of this slide is so you can understand that, the reason why we say the core group doesn't scale as well as a cell of the same size is simply because of this growth. And one thing we've told our customers is like, look, for a large group, to limit the core groups to 50 JVMs. And you can have multiple core groups, and we have concept of core group bridging now that allows you to share the shared state information between the core group members. Which is utilized by XD. But the point of this slide is to understand, one, that the burden that your system has to go through with additional JVMs in your environment. Two, that there are limitations in terms of best practices. The number we throw is 50, but I do have seen customers with 88 members in a core group, and And that has worked well in the case because not all of them are active at all times, considering that some of the dormant members in a dynamic cluster are not running at all times. So this is an important, and you also have suitable parameters that can allow you to increase the buffer size for the DCS and the transfer buffer size utilized by RMM to provide you with additional performance benefits that you can achieve. So let's move on to slide 15. One thing, while we go up to the Xgene large topology, we discussed so far as to the few challenges that we see in NDE. So I've drawn the differences between configuration and operation management. I've talked about core groups and HA manager. One thing to remember is since group service is only available between members of the same core group, meaning if you have a cell of 100 server, 100 app servers, and you have broken them down into two core groups, the group services are only available to between the members between them. So if you have any messaging engines or workload manager, it's only available. So we do recommend that if you currently have static clusters, the cluster members be confined to the same core group, simply because of this aspect of the limitation. Also, the services provided by the HA manager are also scoped for the core group. So all the functions that we talked about, the reason why we have core group, are confined to that set of JVMs that are part of the group. So things like your member-to-member application domains and workload management and highly available singleton services can only be established across processes in the same core group, meaning that if a JVM fails in a core group and there's an essential service running on it, then the service will be brought up in another JVM in the same core group, and it will not have any relation to a similar singleton service that may be running in parallel to another core group. So that's something which is important to know. And how does core group maintain all this information is something which we'll talk about, things like your bulletin board, which XD uses extensively as well, in which your live process state, which is the routing data that XD uses, is obtained from the bulletin board, which all the members uses. Now, so this is important to understand this part, because remember, any autonomic environment, it has to be agent-based. Like XD, the agent that we talked about earlier, those four autonomic managers, which are nothing but agents, provide certain information to the system. And the system has to have some mechanism to one, obtain the information, and two, make sense of it. So it has to, it has to get the information somewhere. So you have this concept of bulletin board, which is nothing but a data structure, which all these agents will post their information to the bulletin board, and then all the other receiving or subscribing agents will get the information, compute the results, and provide the feedback to the other controllers that they can take action, like stopping and starting servers, and so on and so forth. So let's move on to the next slide. So here are a few examples that I want to throw out. And again, I think this example comes from one of the papers that Lee Williamson and his team wrote on best practices for web-scale large topologies. So in some customer environment, we've seen these three types, and I think pretty much in all your environments, you may have a mix or you can see similarities between any one of the topologies that's discussed here. So topology one, we've seen we have quite a balance of nodes and app servers per node. In topology two, you can see you have more nodes and fewer app servers per node, and three is another extreme in which you only have two nodes, but you have an excessive amount of application server per node. So the point that I'm trying to make here is that in topology one, for instance, when you have a mix of nodes and app servers, you have to realize that there is a communication channel between these nodes. They have to be on dedicated, depending on the machines that are involved, you things like network latency, processing speed, all factors can play in. And in second topology, you've seen that we have more nodes and that we have fewer app servers, and that could be simply because each node may not have the level of capacity that the topology one has to offer. In topology three, we see the other extreme in which, you have a big machine, you only have two nodes, and we've 200 plus application server per node, simply because the node actually has a capacity to handle that kind of processes on each. So large topology does not always mean the size of the environment or data center. If you ask me, it's mostly determined by the output from the environment and the ability to absorb the growth. So you may have the environment in which you may have single boxes and you have an app server in each of those machines, and that may not perform as well as, say, a big iron in which you have 200 application servers, simply because of the latency that the network may introduce of networking those 200 individual nodes, whereas of, you know, the communication on a single node may be much faster. So we have to consider those things. And usually, mixed use of hardware and software assets, all those contribute to the overall performance side of things. So the point of this slide is to make sure, one, that we consider these things. We don't take them for granted. We consider the network latency. We consider the processing speeds. We consider the bus speed and so on and so forth. That may add to the overall performance of the environment. So when someone says they have 200 server cell and you say you have 200 server cell, you may have a significant difference if you actually go down to the metal on which these servers sit on. Let's move on to slide 17. And again, we talk about HM Azure implications in XE environment. The reason why I introduce this slide is you have health check messages. We talk about these controllers, and we say that these controllers emit or collect information from time to time and publish it. And when they publish it, there are subscribers to these messages. And to give an example, in XE environment, you would have an ODR. An ODR would have something called an ARFM gateway, which publishes as to how much, what is the response time that's getting per application, and how many requests are in the queue. Because ODR is basically, you know, the entry point into your XE environment. And it sends that information across your bulletin board, and things like your work profiler and ARFM controller subscribe to that information. And once it gets that information, it's aware now that, look, I have X amount of requests waiting, and my request time is now degrading, so I may need additional servers to request, to service those requests. Once ARFM computes that information, it then lets application placement controller know, look, I need another server instance. And then APC will start their application server instance from a set of dynamic cluster members that's available. So you see as to how each component is passing on information to another component, and the component that computes and takes action on these. So you can imagine as to how much messages that go back and forth depending on how busy your environment is, right? So the health check messages that go between, you know, core groups is important. All members of core group must be located on the same machine connected by high-speed LAN. This is important because oftentimes we have discussed things like, you know, cross-cell communication and so on and so forth. We do strongly recommend to have all the machines core group in the same LAN, not by WAN, because of simple network latency introduced by communication between the core group members. Also, core groups don't communicate across firewalls, which typically is the case between two LANs. So that's one thing to keep in mind, that confine the members to a high-speed LAN, which should be a LAN, not across a WAN. Core groups does not communicate across firewall. So if you have a firewall between two core group members, then essentially core group HM manager coordinator, which is sitting on one of the core group members, is going to declare the other members across the firewall dead simply because it cannot communicate with the other JVMs. So one thing which I discussed earlier in one of the slides was the number of sockets. So as you can see, that the more JVMs that you add, the size of your socket grows, so you have exponential growth in the amount of sockets. So you see here, I've given an example of 200 JVMs, which require, you know, if you do the permutation combination of each JVM communicating with another JVM, you would have about 40,000 sockets, as opposed to 50 members, which you have 9,800 sockets. So it's more manageable to have smaller core groups and bridge them using core group bridge, and we'll talk about bridging in a few minutes. Again, making a whole lot of changes, I think core group can be configured once and left alone. Making a whole lot of changes would oftentimes introduce instability because you're trying to, the core group has to restart to kind of absorb those changes. With XD, because XD is designed for large topologies and is designed to absorb growth, we provide a script, and I'll talk about that script in a few minutes, as to how the script is designed to ensure that all the dynamic cluster members are assigned or are confined to the same core group. And as your capacity grows, the script can be further run. The script can be further run to include or to ensure that you're able to design your environment for the growth. So that script is kind of important. We've got that script from a customer engagement. It was a complicated environment, and that script was a birth from that environment. So again, core group bridge considerations. Core group bridge is important, simply because, say, in the example that I gave earlier, if you have 200 JVMs in a core group environment, then each core group has to communicate with other core groups for simply to share the server state information, which is then utilized by the X3 controllers to let the ODR know with servers up and with servers down, and that's how ODR then routes the request to these servers that are available. So to get that information, it's important that these core groups are bridged. And with XD6.1, if you configure multiple core groups, by default, these core groups are bridged. So you don't have to go and configure additional bridges. By default, you can go and bridge it. However, even though we will bridge these core groups, it's important for you to know that you can now have to consider things like access points, things like how much memory or which node you want to designate as a dedicated core group bridge. And as your environment grows, you may want to dedicate one process just for handling the core group bridge access point, simply because of the amount of traffic and the amount of messages that it processes. And you don't want that to impact any application that may be running on an app server, which may also be acting as a core group access point. So this is important to know, because also there's high availability considerations. For example, if you have more than two or three core groups, would mean that you would have more than two or three core group bridges access points. And if one of the bridge access points is down, because the server is down, then it actually impacts the transfer of shared state information, which may then trigger off other issues such as, the ODR not knowing which server is up and which server is down because your core group access point is down. So you may have to even look for looking into designing some sort of high availability between these core group access points. So having, for example, more than one JVM to access access points. So in case one goes down, the other one will pick up the slack. Next slide, please. So the differentiating impactors, and I use the word demonstrable as impactors. I'm from Austin, so I took the liberty of using a Bushism term. The impactors here really mean is, first we have to look at the environment as a whole, look at things like your network resources, your computing resources, draw differences between system management performance concerns and runtime management performance concerns, which we've discussed earlier. Additional demand posed by the various autonomic, controllers. I think this is one of the most important aspects because each of the autonomic controllers, as you saw the diagram earlier, in which you have the DCS and HA manager services, and you have the other services that piggyback on this mechanism. Having this additional XD autonomic controllers would mean that you have additional message processing happening utilizing the same resources that are available in ND, meaning that you may have to configure for additional buffer and so on and so forth. So I discussed these various components in ND, namely HA manager and core groups, which due to the nature of services they offer, should be included in the design process. It's extremely, I just cannot stress hard enough, it's extremely important to consider these and tune them, because we're planning a topology for growth. While a stable ND environment is almost a must, I think, for a stable XD environment. So first, before we move into creating an XD environment, we ought to ensure that you have a stable ND environment. Also things like factoring additional group services like bulletin board, and in 6.1 we've introduced something called WSSON, which is service overlay network, which is essentially to overcome a few of the deficiencies of bulletin board, because bulletin board in 6.0 times proved to be a little resource intensive process. So we introduced a parallel network in which XD controllers can use this. We can go into those details later on WSSON. It's a whole different presentation on that. But the reason why I introduced these two is because the progress that we've made from 6.0 to 6.1 from the experience that we've seen. Additional consideration is size of core group. Like I said earlier, the magic number that we use is 50, but I've seen customers use 80 simply because they are aware that they don't plan to use more than 40 to 50 processes running at any given point of time in that core group. Core group bridge, we talked about this earlier, ensure for two things. One is high availability of the bridge itself. and also dedicate a bridge if you have a large environment just to handle the processing of messages between the two core groups. Application considerations, and this is also important, even though we haven't touched briefly upon this, is if you are using any of the core group services like memory-to-memory application or data replication services, you have to understand that you are further stressing your core group services. So you may have to increase your DCS buffer size and RMM transport buffer size to factor in the additional data that's being transported via sockets to each of the JVMs in the core group. The last point, there's a paper coming out of this, which our team has written in the Sphere Journal and will be published internally within IBM, on tuning XU controller sensitivity. Now, remember, we talked about those four controllers, the APC, the ARFM controller, the DWLM controller, and the health controller. Each of these controllers do two things. One of two things. It basically either generates statistics that's used by a different controller to compute and take an action, or they take action based on a cue provided by another component. So you want to make sure that you tune the sensitivity, and if your controller is too sensitive, meaning that, if you have an anomaly in, for example, a request that comes in and you're not meeting service level agreements, you don't want the controller to kick off another server to meet the service need, because you may have one request which may have breached the service policy or service level agreements of X seconds. And at that point, you don't want the XU controllers to kick off another server process because, just one request which was out of the spec. So oftentimes we have, and we've provided much detail in a paper that's yet to be published, which is essentially providing, look, if you see this behavior continually for X amount of minutes, then take an action. Don't take an action if you see one particular request going out of spec, either because the request is stuck or it was a system anomaly. That's one thing. Second thing is, oftentimes there is a case in which you may have a grave problem like memory leak, and memory leak is just triggering too fast, in which application runtime cannot do a whole lot about it. So simply continually starting the servers will not fix your problem, meaning if memory leak is happening over 4 days, it's great, but if memory leak is happening over 2 hours and your health controller is continually recycling servers every 2 hours, that really adds additional stress to the environment. So you can tune your controllers in such a way that it can define, like, look, if you're restarting the same server in the period of, four times in 1 hour, or if you have to restart the server X amount of times, then simply render the server in maintenance mode, thereby preventing, additional server restarts, because remember, server restart is a process-intensive process. So I think combination of these considerations, size of core group, bridging consideration, application considerations, tuning XU controller sensitivity, and also tuning your core group services, can lead us in the right direction in tuning your large topology for your XU. And one more thing that I want to mention while we're on this topic is that oftentimes the promise of XU or the value that XU offers is usually attained in a large environment because you're trying to create a shared environment for shared services. So the economies of scale that you're going to get from cost savings with hardware, software, server consolidation, so on and so forth, is usually achieved faster when you deploy XU in large environments. So the chances of seeing XU in large environments higher simply because of the environment that it's really intended for. Slide 19, please. So here we talk about tuning XU controllers, and I think I briefly discussed this in previous slides, is you have to, one, understand the various subcomponents. And this is true for the Vsphere, administrators. Even though the intent of XU is to be, it's an add-on product to Vsphere, so when you install XU, it really adds additional, components to your console. So the learning curve for the Vsphere administrators is incremental because they don't have to learn the console all over again. They only have to know about the XU side of things. So even though that part has been made easier, the Vsphere XU or Vsphere admins have to know, one, the relationship between the XU controllers and what each controller does. Knowing this will allow them to tune and tune the sensitivity of these controllers. For example, ARFM. ARFM is the request flow manager, which is responsible for kind of the request flow of requests coming in from the outside into your environment. And it itself has three different components that it runs. APC is Application Placement Controller, which the sole purpose is to stop and start application servers when it receives queue from Health Controller and ARF Controller. Health Controller's job is to ensure that your health policies are met. So, for instance, if you define that, you know, if my server reaches X amount of memory threshold, then quit the server, take a heap dump, and bring the server back into commission. And that function is done by Health Controller. But then you have a DWLM controller, which assigns the static weights, and you have one controller per dynamic cluster. So understanding these components and where they run, it's important simply because then you're able to tune and further troubleshooting environment. Now, even if you don't know where they're running on the console itself, on the XP console, you have an option to identify where each of these controllers are running. It actually points to the server process and the node where these controls are running. And each of them are HA managed, so they're running in one of the JVMs. By default, they will run on your node agents, but it can run on any JVM. The next point is the action on decision by XG controllers. Remember that tuning begins with defining realistic goals, meaning that oftentimes, because XG can do many things in terms of, you know, handling the threshold and creating more resources, it will not make your applications go any faster. So if your application, your test conditions are providing certain response times, I think we have to be realistic about when we define service policies or what's the expected response time that you see from your applications. Simply defining unrealistic goals would only mean that your XG controllers will do its best to meet those goals simply to fail because, you know, sometimes those requests may not just be possible to, you know, finish in that amount of time that you have in the visual thinking. And second thing that you may want to do is tune the controllers to absorb anomalies. And I gave the example earlier that if your service policy goals are, say, you know, 2 seconds per request, and one request is taking 4 seconds, you don't want the controllers or ARF and APC controllers to kick off another server process with another one request. Because kicking off a server process instance means starting another JVM, which oftentimes is a resource-intensive activity. Two important facets of XG topology planning, and I think before we even go into high-level functions, is you have to have a sound and stable infrastructure, starting from ND, and make sure you're not experiencing a whole lot of, and you've tuned your environment for a busy activity on ND side. And then having realistic expectations in terms of goals and policies for the system, meaning that XG provides you with a whole lot of policies, a whole lot of health policies, a whole lot of service policies, and options to tune them. But we have to be realistic about how we set them, and I think that's important. And you know, even though we specify XG as an autonomic agent, I think oftentimes you know you would imagine that you know autonomic agents are self-tunable, but you also have to be cognizant of the fact that even a true autonomic system can have resource constraints, like your bodies, right? So spending additional time and resources into planning a topology for growth can only prove to be cost-effective and operationally efficient. Next slide, please. Okay, best practices. Now let's go into some customer. I think we have 5 or 10 more minutes, so let's go into some topologies, and I'll discuss them in detail. So next slide talks about a sample mortgage bank topology, in which in this case you see this is the case when we observed that, you know, we tried with 88 JVMs per core group simply because one is that they didn't anticipate the load of as many JVMs in the environment, and 88 seemed to have scaled well, and also they didn't expect more than 40 JVMs to be active at any given point of time per core group. So even though we had 88 JVMs, each of some of the DC members were dormant, meaning they were not active, and that allowed us to go with the number of 88, even though the magic number that we throw out is 50. So in this case, you'll see that, you know, you have one cell. We had 40 dynamic clusters. We have 40 applications. For this. So you have basically one application per dynamic cluster. And you had 11 application servers per dynamic cluster. So each dynamic cluster had 11 application servers. You had 40 DCs and 40 applications. And this was a pretty large environment. I think initially we did see a few challenges, which we go to the next slide. Next one, Elijah. So this is the one, yeah. So here we, you know, when we initially started off with XG installation from the box, we did see a few issues in terms of we saw an extremely high CPU utilization on nodes. So then we started investigating it as to, you know, why we're seeing high CPU. And after a few days of investigation, we realized that XG enables the performance advisor because that's utilized. The same PMI the performance it a framework is utilized by health controller. So basically, which results in several MBEAM calls to each node agent, and that was causing a very high CPU utilization. So we changed the frequency of that. We also changed the cycle, for example, the cycle duration in perf tuners.xml file, which is basically on every server, and PMI information and perf tuner.xml files controls the interval and types of data that's sent by every server process to be managed by health controller. So you can imagine as to, we start from default. By default, it's 15 seconds in perf tuners. We increase that to 60 seconds, and we saw a significant drop in that high CPU utilization that we saw earlier. Next slide, please. And I apologize. I'm rushing through many of these. I want to spend more time, but obviously this is a very deep topic, and we have less time at this point. XT large topology problems and solutions. This is, again, continuation of the same mortgage bank that we discussed earlier. That often, initially we saw DC creation time, which took up to 6 minutes. And every time a cell would go beyond 50 to 75 servers, the DC creation time took about, 6 minutes. And this is not really an XD issue. It boiled down to a system management issue. A fix was released for this to kind of reduce the amount of time that it takes to create. And I think we brought down from 6 minutes to 1.5 minutes, and that was acceptable by the client. And then you have Intel bulletin board messaging, and I think we talked earlier about the implications of this, high messaging that your bulletin board now has to process. So you have the synchronization state of on-demand configuration, and ODC is the configuration that's used by ODR to be able to decide on which server is available, which server is not available. So to make all this intelligent routing decision that ODR does, it needs the shared state information. So we introduced a fix, and basically the fix really entailed changing the time from subscribers and publishers, meaning we change the rate as to how often these controllers publish their findings or publish the statistics and how and who subscribe to them. And that brought down the performance, or that improved the performance 90%. So all these were the learnings that we did initially, which is introduced now. It's included in the fixes, the latest fixes that has been published, have all these issues that we have seen earlier. Next slide, please. So continuing with the same client, usability of core group configuration, basically. We recommended everything that I've discussed earlier regarding core group size, the core group bridges, the cluster member assignment, and so on and so forth. So earlier, because they were working in an ND environment and they never had to deal with core group and deciding the size of core groups, they were having just one core group. So you can imagine if you have 240 nodes in a core group, that was also creating all kinds of problems. So development provided them with a script, which is now included in the product, and support can provide this to you if you already have an XD environment. It's core group split. So it's a JSON or Python script that allows you to, it creates an appropriate number of core groups based on the number of nodes you have, so you don't have to do the math and kind of figure out as to how many core groups do I need. The script will run, it identifies how many app servers or how many server processes there in a cell, and it basically bifurcates them into the appropriate number of core groups. Also, you would ask or the customer asks, what happens if I grow, like tomorrow if I want to include and add more servers. So the script allows you to basically, from time to time, rerun the script to factor in the growth. The only caveat to that would be that you may have to restart yourself, so it has to be a planned effort. But nonetheless, I think the script eases a lot of burden and pain into deciding which nodes will be a part of which core group. So if you have X amount of VCs, the script will ensure that those VC members are in the same core group and not split across core groups. Next slide, please. And again, I think this is just a topology, as we can have a whole presentation of this. But this basically gives you two types of core group bridging topology. One is mesh topology, one is link topology. And just a short, basically, mesh topology, like you see here, each core group talks to every other core group. It's a highly redundant topology in case, every core group is talking to every other core group. And link topology is basically a daisy chain type of topology. So in case CG core group access point 1 goes down, the access point 2 can communicate with access point 4, as you see in this link topology, through core group 3. So it does provide some level of redundancy, but I think mesh is obviously more process intensive, but more redundant in its approach. Next slide, please. I think we've talked about this, so let's move on to next slide. So here's the retail deployment, and this is another example that we got. In this case, this customer was a little more disciplined in terms of how they wanted to use their core groups. They stuck to their 50 or lower limit, and also they were very conservative in having one application per dynamic cluster. They didn't want to mix having more than one application per dynamic cluster. And the reason for that is also the historical approach. They've always had one application per app server. Also, they actually had a dedicated static cluster for core group access point. Remember, we talked about the high availability aspect of core group access points. They decided to actually have a static cluster for it, which provides them high availability of core group access points, thereby ensuring that the shared information is the shared state information is always available to the ODR. Again, they employ the CGV mesh topology, which provides them with higher redundancy between the core group members. Next slide, please. And this slide just gives you a little schema of a sample case study for retail. They have 60 dynamic clusters, 30 applications. So basically, they had 17 core groups, 14 plus application servers per core group, 20 app servers per node. They had about 12 nodes. And basically, this is more on the topology 2 that we discussed earlier, in which they had a good balance between the number of nodes and number of application servers per node. At the same time, if you notice, they have 60 dynamic clusters and 30 applications, meaning they're using half the capacity of dynamic clusters on every node. So they have double the amount of capacity that they, anticipate in terms of high traffic times. Next slide, please. Again, in this case, large contain too many. So we've seen some of the similar issues in terms of creating additional dynamic clusters or synchronizing it. So what we have, XC team worked with the system management team to provide some additional fixes to ensure that the application would not, the infrastructure would synchronize on time and the dynamic cluster creation time would be reduced. Also, we've seen that since the application would not be running more than four dynamic cluster members, the cell was split into four core groups. I think I've discussed that earlier in the previous slide, that they decided to actually have double the capacity for per core group in terms of the relation between the number of servers per core group. Next slide, please. Okay. So let's go, this is the crux of it. Best practices in terms of understanding details. I talked about earlier, I can't stress that enough, understand the implication of XC components and controllers in a shared environment. Basically, now that we've discussed the details of various components in ND and XC that are important enough for people like you and me and the planners and the administrators to pay attention during the design process. So even though XC has a lot of features available in it, I think your environment can be a lot more productive and less intrusive if you were to spend some time in designing things like your core group, best practices around number of core groups, the core group bridges, the buffer size between that enables communication between the core groups, and the application considerations like if you have if you're utilizing DRS and so on and so forth. So planning details is you have to make sure you have the cells, hardware resources, implementation details, ensuring that you have the latest fixes. Almost, some of these are really obvious, but end-to-end consideration should be given, that, meaning from your resources available, network, hardware, to the size of core groups, factoring in growth, and so on and so forth. Next slide, please. A few things not to do is avoid one large core group. Again, you can partition several cells into smaller core groups, and a core group bridge will be created, but you have to now consider into high availability of those core group bridges. We talked about this. They should be in the same LAN, and groups should be connected with the core group bridge if shared server data is to be. So, and this bridge is automatically created when you actually in X61 when you create more than one core group. Next slide, please. So, one thing about firewall is that right now the ODR and proxy, which is basically your plugin, your ODR in the DMZ is not supported. And the reason why it's not supported at this point in time is because of the same reasons why we did not support or we did not recommend using the plugin, process integrity. Process integrity and security, and so on and so forth. So we have seen customers trying to implement this, and we published a detailed paper on the Sphere Journal on this as to the communication between ODR and the backend servers require TCP and UDP, and in most cases, firewalls are restrictive. Hence, having ODR and the firewall will typically not work in many scenarios, simply because of the existing infrastructure that's employed by ODR. There are talks about this to support this in the future because many customers have asked for it. We are yet to see any developments in that space. But that's something to be aware of, that, you know, at this point, we don't recommend putting ODR in the DMZ or behind the firewall. Next slide, please. So some closing thoughts, slides after that, slide 34, is one thing I've always told customers is, you know, even though XD provides you with a lot of infrastructure shared services, always performance test your applications. XD will not make your application run any faster than it was, even though it has capability of making sure it's continuously available. But you want to ensure that you do the normal software development lifecycle and go through the performance testing and so on and so forth, and use that benchmark data to design your service policies. You know, devise an incremental approach, meaning we've always told customers that don't get the whole, you know, the object grid and the partitioning facility and the core, you know, start slow, meaning introduce the ODR or introduce the dynamic clusters and slowly introduce the ODR. And with ODR plugin mapping capabilities, you can generate plugins at the server level, at the node level, at the cell level. And you can basically start small with just routing traffic to a specific dynamic cluster or specific application through ODR, and the remaining traffic could then be the normal ND as an easy transition into XD environment. That way, you have less a disruptive change management as opposed to going all aboard. Using on-demand features requires preparation and analysis before implementation, meaning that you have to involve all affected groups in planning. And we are shortly going to publish a paper on the changes that are you know, involved due to adoption of XD. Things like, you know, using features like application visioning or service policies, in which you may have to involve your business groups as well as to how to decide which application is more important than the other. The process of rolling out application updates may have to be changed. So there's a significant amount of change that your enterprise will go through. So you may have to include all the stakeholders, your developers, to make them aware of this application additioning feature, which allows you to have more than one edition of an application. So that's something which you may have to look into and plan for. Also, going to shared resources would mean that you may have to have a chargeback model and educate your other line of businesses on how that's going to work and how that's going to impact them in terms of cost and so on and so forth. So even though many of these features are technically handled, you may have to have a cultural intervention in educating your teams. Next slide. I'd just like to acknowledge a few folks. These folks I've gone to them several times, and the list can go on, but like I said earlier, in addition to these folks, the entire XD development team has been very instrumental in helping with creating these set of, you know, a body of knowledge to be used by the field. And I think we can now open up. In references, just a case, me and my team have been publishing several papers on deep dive on XD. So we actually go into very granular level details this is a 5-part article being published in the Sphere Journal and also on the Developer Works. So you can actually get these, and they are really easy to read. They're lengthy, but they're easy to read, and it's really we try to keep easy language on understanding XD components and how they work together. Next slide. Some of the references that I've used in writing this, and any questions I can open up for now.
Thank you, Nathan, for a great presentation.
And we'll take our first question from Mahendra Patel with Harcourt.
Hi. Thank you very much for a great presentation and taking my call. I have a couple of questions, and first one is, like in ND, we need to have a deployment manager installed or deployed on highly available node, means it is not clusterable. I might be wrong stating this, but do we have the similar situation with XD as well, like deployment manager on highly available?
Right, it's a very good question. So you're right, and oftentimes in ND world, we've told our customers that, look, since GManager is not involved in application serving functions, even if GManager were to go down, the only thing that you lose is the admin functionality, right?
Right.
So, and many customers have done sort of a HACMP type of solution where, you know, they've shared the configuration information, and if one node goes down, the other one comes up, and some sort of a low-cost solution. With XD, we've introduced something called XD HAD Manager, which is a script that you run. And with that, what we have done, because we do realize that in XD environments, for you to even have inside a manager environment, the manager becomes important. It becomes important because it's the only view into your environment, right? So you have to have the manager in which you have to, you have to know where your components are running. You have other statistics, like if you want to get charts about how your service policies are kept and so on and so forth. Even better, if you were to use this in a stack product scenario where you have process server, then you have certain server explorers that you need to have access to. So what we've done in XD is you have Hive Availability Manager, which allows you to run a script on another node as long as your configuration information is shared on a shared file system, which is CIFS or an FS version 4, or even SAN-based solution. Then you can run the script on another node, and then your HA manager is highly available. So you have two processes running, and you can access the HA manager through ODR. So if one D manager goes down, then the ODR will route the request to another D manager that's available, and both have access to the same configuration file. So no matter where you make changes to, if you make changes to the same configuration file, but only one D manager will be active.
The another question that I have is, this might not be right place to ask this question, but about the licensing. The XD licensing different from the ND licensing?
That is correct. So XD is not part of ND. It requires ND as a prerequisite.
Okay.
So you have ND licensing, and on top of that you have XD licensing.
Okay.
So even though you have the same administrative console, it's a separate product altogether.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think that's all I have.
As a reminder to everyone, that is star 1 if you have a question today. And we'll hear next from David Lowe with AT&T.
Yeah, I had posed my question on the group chat also.
Right.
We have a lot of environment where we have the deployment manager and node profiles running on the same physical box.
Right.
I guess in XD, what are the advantages and disadvantages of, both profiles running on the same box, being there's an ODR involved?
Right. So ODR is also another application server process, really. It's a specialized application server process, as you already know. The only disadvantage that I can see is that, same rules apply as you would have in ND environments, meaning that are you saying that you have D-manager and node profile on the same physical machine, and if that physical machine were to go down, then your D-manager is down as well?
Right, because I believe on one of the recommendation core configuration, they're saying put the deployment manager in a different box.
Right.
And I really couldn't figure out what.
Right. So here's what we said, and that's a different version. I think I know what you're
talking about. 6.1, yeah.
Right. So this is what happens with this, right? When we say have D-manager on separate machine, we have customers who have multiple cells and who've chosen to have D-manager on one, all the D-manager on of all the cells in one node. When we say to separate the D-manager from other, for ODR, for example, we say one for process isolation. Two is we oftentimes recommend, and this comes from many, many sources, to ensure that the ODRs are not running on any other, are running on the nodes that are running any other processes like D manager or node agent or any of the app server. Simply because if an app server is having memory leak issue or consuming XML CPU issues, then that's going to impact your ODR, which essentially becomes the gateway to your entire XD environment. Right? So as a precautionary measure, we've asked our customers to keep that separate. But there's always an argument because you may have a high-end machine. You may have, like I mentioned in one of the examples, when you only had two nodes, but you had 200, servers per node.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a high-end machine and you have the processing power, or you may have a hardware virtualized environment in which you have LPARD scenario, then I don't see why. I've seen many customers who do this.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no advantage or disadvantage per se. It is just that as a standard recommendation, if you have a standard distributed scenario, we've asked ODR to be on separate nodes, so to speak. And that's because we don't want anything else to interfere with the ODR's functionality.
Okay. Now, ODR normally runs on which profile?
Right. So ODR is also a specialized application server.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that, say, you know how you create a node and you federate a node through the manager.
Yeah.
And as long as you have a node federated, you can create a demanager as an application server process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's running on one of the federated nodes
mm-hmm.
as one of the profiles.
Okay.
So you can run this on any app server profile.
Yeah, basically. Okay. Gotcha.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Right. So basically, advantage and disadvantage is very subjective.
Right.
And I know it's very hard to say, you know, this is the rule of thumb, because depending on the hardware that you have, I mean, if I've invested, you know, a very high dollar amount into a very high scalable machine,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, I would want to exploit that to its fullest. Right.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I wasn't quite sure where the sample topology was heading at by saying that. But okay, thank you.
Does this clarify it, or you still...
Oh, yeah, it's clarified.
Okay,
yeah, thank you. Yeah.
As a final reminder to everyone, that is star one if you have a question today. And we'll hear next from Masood Yunus with United Health Group.
And thank you very much for a wonderful presentation. My question is, I've actually posted in the group chat as well, and it probably gets tied into what Dave said. What are the merits, demerits, or constraints of spinning off multiple profiles, node profiles, on one single box and syncing them up to a deployment manager, which is a separate box, and probably spinning off another node on the same box as ODR?
Right. As ODR, you said?
Yes.
Right.
As ODR and actually, dynamic cluster nodes as well.
Right. So you are familiar with the variable scope hierarchy in which the files are located on the deep.
Actually, I've been lucky enough in past 2 weeks. I did a lot of research on XT because I was given a project to set up a test sandbox environment.
Right.
So I guess I learned a few things.
Right. So what happens is this, right? If you look at if you go and navigate the deep manager, which is supposed to be the master repository of all the configuration files
mm-hmm.
of the entire environment, they are kind of, you know, you have cell and you have nodes. Under nodes, you have multiple nodes, and each node will have its own profiles and so on and so forth.
Right.
And the choice or the decision to have X amount of nodes or X amount of profiles is purely based on your server capacity.
Mm.
Right? Because there are customers who are having a high-end machine, and I personally, in my lab environment, in my office, I basically have, you know, one of a machine has, I have five nodes on it, and I have multiple profiles on each of those nodes. Right.
Okay.
So you can have multiple nodes because I have I just have one plate server and that has the capacity to handle that stuff. Now, when you talk about synchronization, what happens is, because the synchronization of each file, remember, the file is organized in a hierarchy, right? You have
mm-hmm.
nodes, and under nodes you have node name, and each node has, you know, profiles and profile names, server
mm-hmm.
name, and so on and so forth. When you synchronize it, your D manager will push those files out to these respective nodes and respective servers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you can imagine now that I'm pushing all these files, and I'm pushing files from D manager to X amount of nodes. And if all those X amount of nodes reside on one box,
mm-hmm.
you can imagine a big pipe between your D manager
right.
and your, right? So
right.
that becomes a network constraint, not so much a web share constraint at that point.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because remember, file I/O at that point is still running the separate file systems, not just one file, so you may not have file locking issues. And so on and so forth.
Okay.
Because they're located differently. There's only one scenario which I'd like to point out is there's one file which is server index.xml file which is common because it has basically host and port information which is common to all servers. And I believe from 5.1.1.1 from that time onwards there's a process in which you do a check in, check out and there's a merge which is transparent to the end user in which if you make multiple changes to your host name and so on and so forth, it basically merges the two changes made simultaneously, but that should not be an issue.
Okay, wonderful. I actually have a little another question too.
Okay.
Probably ties to this as well. ODR.
Right.
I haven't really understood properly how ODR works by taking the plugin out from the IHS
right.
thing and, you know, working with integrating WebSphere with
right.
IHS. If you can just give us a very brief
on
how it actually works.
Absolutely. So what happens is, remember, in the pre-XT world, we generated a plugin file. Plugin file had nothing but mappings of an of the application root
mm-hmm.
context
mm-hmm.
to a particular app server. And the request came into IHS. IHS then saw the plugin files, okay, the application, and you had server weights and you had clusters, and plugin would route the request to these application servers.
Mm-hmm.
Also remember, plugin was very static, right, because you had to specify server weights, and depending on weights, there was an algorithm that it would run, which would identify that, you know, for every three requests, the server will get one request, for
mm-hmm.
example, right? Now, with ODR, we cannot go through the model because everything is dynamic, right? Remember,
right.
the whole thing is, the servers go up and down, the user don't even know about it.
Right.
When you go through that model, there has to be some mechanism to make sure that there's some entity that knows about these changes and is able to route requests accordingly. So what we've done is introducing ODR, it's really a highly intelligent router, which keeps track of its backend application servers, like which application is sick, which application is running out of memory, which application is up and down, and which dynamic cluster. And I talked about dynamic workload manager component earlier in this presentation, which then, based on the processing power of the machine and the request the machine is handling, adjusts the weight of those servers dynamically. So if a machine is totally bogged down, it's going to mark the weight zero, that because the machine can't handle, thereby preventing from you know, that machine from crashing or having additional requests going to that machine. So ODR is the one. So what we've done now is, because ODR does all that intelligent routing and identifying where this application is residing or where the app, you know, is where which server is up, we now generate the plugin from the ODR, and that plugin is then sent to the HTTP server. So when the request comes in, it's very non-intrusive way because you're still generating a plugin, but you're generating a plugin from the ODR now.
Right.
And all the plugin does, all the application environment are now mapped to the ODR. So any request comes in, it goes to ODR, regardless.
Okay, so in a nutshell, ODR decides what resources are available and
right.
how dynamically these resources can be assigned to this particular application.
That's correct.
And at the same time, now we do not generate a plugin out of ND. We generate a plugin out of ODR.
That's correct.
And we still copy over the plugin to IHS.
Very good question. So you can copy it, but there's an option because, remember, we are proposing dynamic environment, meaning
right.
every time you're removing a changing application, you don't want to have the burden of copying the file because that becomes a manual process.
Right.
So we have an option, the configuration file, that you can write a, you know, either a Win script or Unix script to simply copy the file.
The same like we can do an SCP.
Right, right. So basically what you do is every time a plugin is changed, but remember, when you install an application, the plugin file gets changed
right.
automatically.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to generate plugin, it does it automatically. And every time the change happens, the script will kick off and move the file over so the HTTP server can see it.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. Thank you very much for your explanation.
Yep.
That was useful.
So at this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Also, if you have any other questions for Nathan, please, on the e-meeting, his email address is there. So if you didn't get a chance to ask a question, please email him, and I'm sure he'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thanks very much for joining us today, everyone, and thank you, Nathan, for presenting today.
Yep.